Welcome.
Welcome to Brad Time. I'm Charlie Deeds.
And I'm Gabriel Valdivia.
Today we're going to be talking about design, which is something we normally talk about. But today the twist is we're going to be talking about the methodology of design and which one is the right one for you. In general, doing software design, at least at this particular moment in time, I would rather follow as many standards and paradigms that pre-exist as possible and only innovate into something new, a new pattern, when I think that it's like a 10x type of like improvement. Like, and I think it's so rare that that is like something that should be done that I would pretty much avoid it at all costs and like only go into a world where I was trying to invent like a new interaction when I felt like whatever interactions already existed didn't work so well. And I could like, I'll try to like throw an example out there. Android Material Time Picker, maybe. That's like you spin your finger around a clock and you move the like the minute hands and the hour hands. I think like that would be something if I was developing an app for Android where I was like about to use that picker, I might say, hey, this one is like, maybe it works for most people and like people are pretty used to it, but that would be like a moment for me where I'd be like, I actually think maybe like a number-based input for time would be simpler. Like, you know, like something like that. Maybe that's not a good example actually, but the point is like very rarely would I want to approach creating a new paradigm for something like choosing time.
Even. No. You back yourself into the corner here and I'm not going to let you go. You're using an example of a pattern, an OS pattern, for choosing time, right?
And I know, I don't want to change it, is what I'm saying. Like, I think...
But you're saying there is a better or a simpler solution out there. So
I just think maybe they chose the wrong one for that particular thing.
Well, how do you find that out if you don't dare to step outside the conventions, right? Like, if you don't question what is, you know, a time picker in Android, then you never improve it. And I think the more, like... The things we take for granted today, like pull to refresh and other really fundamental interactions, didn't come from the OS, right? It came from third-party applications that explored different ways of achieving the same task, and actually improved upon it. And then the OSs around the world grabbed those patterns and standardized them.
Okay, well, to go back a little bit, I think like to your point, I should question it, which I did. I was questioning that time picker, and then I ultimately heard me flip my switch back where I decided I just actually want to use the like time picker that's part of Android. I don't actually want to go against it because I do believe people can successfully choose the time with that time picker, and that's the time picker that they're normally going to be using. So why would I try to screw at them and give them a different experience when they were very used to it?
Well, obviously you wouldn't try to screw with them. but I think you have the opportunity to improve upon that pattern and potentially provide an even better solution. And I think my point is that there is a 10% or a small chunk, important chunk of your work as a designer, which it should be devoted to improving upon the established patterns, right? So, right. So it may be a reasonable thing to conclude that you're like, yes, sure, I could improve upon the time picker, but for my app, that is not a priority. For my product, you know, I'd rather not spend time there and I'd rather spend it somewhere else. What I say to that is that's fine, but hopefully in the thing that you choose to spend your time on as an app developer or designer, maybe in there should be some percentage of what you're working on that is trying to push the design patterns forward and it is trying to innovate somewhere. Because I think that is our responsibility. If not designers, I think very few people are looking at systems in the way that we are in order to improve upon them.
Yeah, so that goes back to my point. It's like the time picker example, I don't want to change from the system time picker because I don't believe that I can improve on it 10 times, right? Like if I knew that I could do something so significantly better there, that would meet my check mark where it's like, okay, yeah, like now let's invest in this thing and try to figure out a better way to do it.
But like nothing is 10x better than anything. like I think that 10x thing is such a fallacy. Like nothing ever happens that way. Like things get improved upon like gradually and systematically over a long period of time. Nobody comes up with like a eureka thing and is like, oh, you know what? We should have a feed and that's how information should be distributed. Like that never happened. Everything happened gradually.
It happened once.
I very, very skeptical that happened. Like I think somebody made a version of it, somebody made a slightly better version of it, and 10 versions later we landed on the one that we all know today. But like it wasn't like I just closed my eyes, I'm like, oh, we should do this. Like it never works that way, right? It's always just make things a little bit better and better and better.
I agree.
so if we agree, then this myth of a 10x improvement, I think is something we should fight. We should instead look at something as big as a design system and as small as a micro interaction and ask ourselves, can we make it better? And if the answer to that is yes, the next question is, do we want to devote the time to make that better? And, you know, like, hopefully that leads you into a path where you can innovate within your product. And like that, over time, you kind of like contribute to the design language or whatever platform you're working on. And that is what pushes design forward. I think the alternative, which is what I think you're arguing for, is something that just uses the standards and relies on basically the status quo to deliver a solution to a problem, which I think works to some extent, but there is, I think it is a missed opportunity to what designers can contribute uniquely to a product.
So I think like my fear is that designers will try to innovate and fail 9 out of 10 times, right? So like, and that's bad for users, in my opinion. With the time picker example, for example, if I go in there and I screw with it, maybe I make it a little better, maybe I make it a little worse. Either way, like I'm forcing people to constantly readapt to my decisions instead of like just going with what they've probably already dealt with before. Is that like fair for me to be experimenting on them and testing on them in that way? What do I use to decide whether something is valuable enough to innovate on? Like, what is the litmus test for it?
I mean, there's a very clear test. It's called user testing that everyone should do at all times during a design process, right? Like we come up with assumptions that we try to validate through user testing. And I think it is completely fair to come up with something that is potentially worse and test it in whatever scale you think is ethical, right? Whether it's the 1 or 2 to 5 people in a room to hundreds of thousands or millions of people if you wanted to. But, you know, that's how design works. You come up with an assumption that you think is an improvement and then you validate that assumption, right? And sometimes that assumption is wrong. Many, many times that assumption is wrong. And that's why you have to rely on this back and forth between a designer or a design team or a product team that is thinking about a problem and trying to solve it, right? Like innovate in some way. And then, you know, that gets sent back to a user base and they decide whether that is better or not, right? Like they either choose to use your product or not. If they choose not to use it, then you're like, okay, fuck, well, I guess that was the wrong choice. But I think that is design, right? Design doesn't end when you like click Command S on your sketch file and you send it over to engineers. I think design is the creation of that assumption and the validation of it through user testing. I think that is part of the process.
Okay, so I see your point, but don't you think it's potentially like a inefficient way to work if you work that way? If I just go with the HIG, if I just go with the material design to start and I completely course out my design through something that already exists and is already cool, I'm not going to be worrying then about like, all of those variables, right? I'm just focused on the problem, probably the people problem, probably the business problem. And that's what I'm trying to solve for instead of like futzing with this other stuff along the way. Maybe if I have time and the product is working, then I can start to try to like figure out variations that advance that even further, little things that make it easier and better than what has been given to me for free already with the guidelines.
Again, I think solving a problem using current standards usually is a good idea if that's what you care about. But I think as a designers, we have a responsibility. Like, it's not whether that is good or bad or better or worse for the user. I think we, as people that question systems and define these systems, we have a responsibility, almost like a moral responsibility, to push these systems forward. And not doing so might be fine for the business or the product or the company, but I think is a missed opportunity to what you could contribute as a designer, right? Because you're uniquely positioned within a company or an industry to question systems in a way that could build upon them. So sure, you could speak Craigslist. You can, you know, design a website that is super useful and doesn't question any patterns. But I think that's a missed opportunity. I think Craigslist is missing out on a lot better results if they had designers question their assumptions. So I think that even though it might be more efficient to go a certain way, I think designers have a responsibility to push things forward to whatever extent they're comfortable with. It could be the last 5%, or you know, 50% of a designer's job could be dedicated to that. I think is that depends on the designer and what they feel inclined to. But I do think it's a responsibility of the designer, and not doing so, I think, is irresponsible.
I think my nervousness around this whole topic and why I tend to aim for the slightly more conservative angle is just because I remember the web before like Bootstrap, right? Or something, right? There was a web that was kind of chaotic, and like everyone had different patterns. And a lot of people appreciated that for obviously like the dynamic variance that you would experience moving from site to site. That's pretty interesting. But I think it was a less efficient web. I think that Bootstrap and basically a lot of the standards that came out of that era that reside today, where you have some pretty key indicators when using a website of what's going to be happening and where to find the thing you're looking for. I think that that has been helpful to people using the internet.
But efficiency is just one, or efficient is just one adjective, right? Like it is probably more efficient. That's good. But there are other adjectives that have been sacrificed in the name of efficiency. And
I agree.
And as I think the designers sometimes appreciate those adjectives in a unique way than other people do. And I think other adjectives are also valuable, like beautiful, like surprising, like, you know, delightful. All these adjectives are also important, and when put in the balance against efficiency, they've been left behind in service of something that is more efficient, like Bootstrap. And I think that's, you know, I think that is maybe even necessary with the times, but I don't see that as a absolute truth that because things are more efficient now, it is unequivocally better. I think, you know, we can defend these other adjectives and try to introduce them into the mix in a way that give better meaning to things, right? And that's the intangible thing about design that some people are very uncomfortable with. Usually people that come from a different background that is not in the arts or more traditional design kind of upbringing, is this idea that there is a you know, this word that people like to throw around, this delight, this intangibleness of an experience that you want to fight for and you want to promote through your product. That experience is not just about efficiency, but it's about like increase, like adding value to your life and doing so in many different aspects. So I think designers, again, are positioned within a company or an industry in a way that they can defend those values and those other adjectives to bring value along with efficiency, along with profitability, along with engagement, and all the other things that we focus so heavily on today.
I agree. I think it's just probably like a balance. Like, you have to think about what your product is. Like, if it's like a product that is straight up utility, like paying your gas bill, probably delight is actually not the primary thing you're going for. you could throw it in there.
Yeah. But although, like, again, that's the thing that we focus on. That is the revelation we had like a decade ago, that adding bits of delight to even boring transactions or experiences can actually make it better, right? And
I really don't agree with that. I like 100%. There's so few times that delight actually is delightful to me. What's delightful to me is like when I do something and it's effortless, when I do something and it just works and it's fast. Those are the things that actually feel delightful to me and make me like happy. But when like I send my gas bill away and a little guy comes up and says, "Thanks a lot for sending your gas bill. I'm going to do a dance." Like, that's not going to help me, right? Like, that's almost never going to work.
I think that it's layers, right? Like, you want to solve the problem. So, I forgot what the example is, but if you send your gas bill away, like, you want to make sure that you, like, the gas bill is paid. Like, that's important. But let me give you this example, MailChimp. So MailChimp is a traditional...
That's what I was going to bring up too.
I think it's a traditionally hyper boring like industry. What MailChimp did is that they took that industry and they gave it a personality.
What was delightful to me about MailChimp when I first started using it was that it was a clear UI. It worked really well. It was accessible. Like, I didn't have to, it didn't look overly complex. The things that didn't delight me was like, there was like a little joke or something on every single banner at the top of the page, right? Or something. Like, I don't remember what it was, but I remember that there was like humor in the product. That didn't delight me. If anything, it was distracting from what I was trying to accomplish. I'm sure a lot of people liked it, but it's just not what I consider delight. And I think you're getting into risky thing. The more personality you add into the product through design, I think that's just like gonna alienate some amount of people. But you know, it doesn't alienate anyone. Efficiency, speed, clarity, like those things are gonna make everyone happy.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, maybe we're just zooming back to a philosophical point, which is I'd rather make things with an opinion that have the danger of alienating people, and that opinion can be manifest in many ways. But I think there's I think it's a responsibility we have to generate an opinion, right? Whether it's good or bad, and I think that MailChimp did a great job. And what we think is probably very irrelevant. Like, they've been successful empirically through their approach, and they've documented it at length. So people can read it and see how that experiment has done for them. But it certainly brought value to my life over a like strict A to B efficient alternative.
Okay. So now we want to know, what do you think? Is design a boring, cold world where you simply try to make things fast and accessible? Or should you be pushing people's boundaries, giving them delight, and taking them to the next level of experiences and breaking material design for no reason?
Well, I think, again, it's not either or. And if you put people against the wall, they're probably going to choose the utilitarian version, right? The thing that gets A to B, like that gets you closer to it to be faster or more efficiently. I think the question, to kind of build upon what you said, is like, do we have a responsibility? And we can choose to ignore that responsibility, but do we have the responsibility as designers to push the medium forward, like, and to bring along this new this like forgotten adjectives like delight, like surprise?
You said the D word 3 times during this episode.
But this is the episode where we talk about it, because otherwise, like, we just like gloss over it. Like, that's important, and that is the intangibleness of design. So the question for me is, is that a responsibility? Is that part of our responsibility? No matter how small, is that part of our responsibility? And if so, what are you doing about it? You specifically, Charlie Dietz. No, just kidding.
Well, I'll be hanging out in the Slack channel later today and listening to what other people think. You should join our Slack channel. The way you can do so is send us a message on Twitter and just send us your email address and we'll add you in there. We also have started up a Spectrum channel, a Spectrum frequency, should I say. The URL for that is
spectrum.chat/tilde bread-time.
That's a hyphen? That's a hyphen between a bread and time?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, or we'll just also send you the link when you message us for the Slack channel. But we're trying that out. Our friends Bryn and Brian over at Spectrum, they actually have a name for themselves now. I think it's
Space Program.
Yeah. They got a new thing going on, which is a way to have a community and talk about stuff. Follow us on Twitter at breadtimefm.
And we have anything a website, it's breadtime.fm. Oh, yeah. You can listen to everything we've ever said in that website and
I forgot
hold us accountable. Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for hanging out.